mention Jake Shimabukuro's name, and the idea of explosive talent comes to mind. He has two young children, about 3 and 6 now, and he recalled that he first put his fingers on an ukulele when he was about their age. We sat down with him last week as he debuted Greatest Day, his latest album, his 15th.
It's kind of a follow-up to my last record, which was Natural Sessions. And that was an all-original, you know, my first all-original record. It was very experimental, pretty out there. You know, so I wanted to kind of find a good balance of, you know, the traditional sound and then the electric sound, of course. So with this new album, you know, we also I also wanted to balance the original material with recognizable stuff. So there's six original songs and 6 cover tunes. Some of the cover tunes include, you know, pieces by the Beatles, Jimi Hendrix. Remember the Zombies? Time of the Season. We did. We even did some more. A tune from the 80s called "Bizarre Love Triangle" by a group called New Order. And it's a little more my time. And then we also did an Ed Sheeran tune called "Shape of You." So it covered a little bit of everything. And I think to me the greatest compliment came from my parents after I got the CD, the final mix. I gave one to my mom and one to my dad, and they both told me that this is their favorite record.
Wow.
Of mine. So I was like, oh, you know, I'm a, you know, grown man now, but you know, you still want the approval from your parents, and you still want to, you know, you want them to approve of what you're doing.
Yeah,
so.
Well, they're proud of their boy.
That made me feel really good. So.
You know, I have to say that one song, the $5 Unleaded.
Oh yeah.
I just love that story.
Really?
I just love the thought that you actually, you know, captured that time in your life and your dad.
My dad's old green beat up truck that we used to drive around. Yeah, gas is not $5. It's like $5 a gallon now. But back then it was like $5 almost filled up, you know, half his tank at least. So
do you remember when, you know, you were little and you were just messing around on the ukulele, and
you know,
did you ever think that this would develop into, you know, what it has today?
I do remember the first time I picked it up. You know, I was 4 years old and my mom played, so she sat me down and taught me, you know, she put my fingers on the strings and she told me, okay, just hold the string right there and then strum that's your C chord. And I remember just playing that over and over, and I just fell in love with the sound. And but you know, I always loved it. So I learned from her in the beginning, but then when I was about 6 years old, she sent me to Roy Sukuma's ukulele studio. So I went there for about at least 5 or 6 years. And then after that, I also went to, I started learning from other players like Herb Wolter Jr. I went to Tracy Tirada, Byron Yasui was another big influence for me, Gordon Mark. I mean, just so many, Kelly Boy De Lima, you know, all those guys really took me under their wing and just kind of showed me, you know, their approach, their perspective, their technique. And so I feel very fortunate. I had so many people to kind of mentor me and just kind of help me along the way.
So what do you think, because you have kids now too, right?
Yes.
So what do you think about that when you play and...
Well, the thing is, I want them to have an appreciation for music and the arts, you know, because I think that's very important. I don't ever want to pressure them into playing or performing or anything like that, because my parents never pressured me. You know, it was something that I always wanted to do, but they always gave me a lot of opportunities, you know, to try different things, right? So I think that's the most important thing. But I think the ukulele, it really helped me, you know, through some of the harder times in my life, like when my parents went through their divorce. You know, I was only in the 5th grade, and at that time, you know, you're going through all these different emotions and, you know, you're dealing with things that you've never really felt before. So it was a confusing time for me, and I didn't have a lot of I had a few friends, but this was when I was at Alawai Elementary School.
Okay.
But I wasn't a talker. I was the type I would hold everything in, and the ukulele really helped me, because I could sit in my room and play, you know, I could just play chords or play songs, and it helped me to channel those emotions, you know, out and release some of the things that I was feeling in a very positive way. So I think it helped me through a lot, you know, through those times, much like talking, right? Like when you talk to a friend and you tell them, oh, I'm going through this right now, talking to them helps, but it's not so much the words, but it's the emotion that's coming out. So when you're playing an instrument and you're playing music, that's what it is. You know, it's the language of human emotion. So as you're playing, you know, you're just, all of this emotion is flowing out of you, and it helps, you know, it helps to heal. It's therapeutic. And I think I owe a lot to the ukulele.
And I know you've taken ukulele playing to a whole nother level from when I grew up and was, you know, listening to ukulele music. And I read somewhere that, is it Hallelujah? Is that one of the...
Yeah, Hallelujah is a track on the new song, yes.
Yeah, and you said you recorded it, but then after Leonard Cohen died, you wanted to play it again.
Yeah, well, you know, it's always been one of my favorite pieces of music. And I recorded it years ago, but after Leonard Cohen had passed away, I started performing it in my concerts again, right? And I have a new trio that I'm playing with, a guy from Nashville named Nolan Werner on bass, and a guy from Denver, Colorado, his name is Dave Preston, he plays guitar. So we came up with an arrangement and started performing at the shows, you know, as a dedication to Leonard Cohen. And it just took on a whole another, I mean, it almost felt like a different song, you know, because it just comes from a different place emotionally. So I just thought, man, it'd be kind of cool to, you know, re-record it. And then, so that's what we did. And it really captures a different kind of energy, I think. You know, recently there were so many great musicians who we lost, you know. I mean, Eddie Kamai, you know, who was the ultimate ukulele maestro. He was my biggest inspiration. You know, when he passed away, it was like, wow, you know, digging up all his old recordings and listening to that. Or like when the Cruz brothers, you know, when we lost Ernie Cruz and Guy Cruz. I used to play in a band with Guy Cruz, and Ernie, when he was with the Kyle Creator Boys, you know, they were a huge inspiration for me. You know, so, you know, we recently lost Peter Moon, another ukulele player that was just so influential. And I mean, prior to him, nobody was doing anything that he was doing, you know, mm-hmm. So like you said, you know, going back and listening now after they're gone, it's just, you listen to it in a different way. There's a whole new appreciation and it does. It affects you deeper, you know, emotionally. So
Hallelujah is on the track.
Yeah, so Hallelujah is on the track. I mean, and it's funny, you know, because that song, for me, there's just something about that tune that just tugs at my, you know, my heartstrings or whatever. But, you know, versus covering we also covered If Six Was Nine, you know, Jimi Hendrix, who... again, was just another iconic artist, but you know, covering a song like that, interestingly, it's emotionally, it's just different, you know, because the song comes from a different place, and even though he passed away, right, and a lot of people were saddened by his passing, but I think a lot of it has to do with the music that they write, you know. So Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah just has a special place, I think, for us emotionally, you know. So I think no matter if he were still alive or, you know, or whatever, anyone who covers that song, it just comes from a special place. And that's the power of composition, the power of just true artistry, right?
And you've called this album The Greatest Day, and you made a reference to a day when you were in the studio and things just clicked.
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, well, that was one of the things is, you know, just being in the studio with everyone, just being around all this, you know, just everyone who's just so passionate about what they're doing. They just have so much joy, and we're all doing what we love, smiling, laughing, having a great time. You know, that's like, to me, I don't know, it's just such a wonderful feeling, you know, to be able to do something that you absolutely love with people who absolutely love, you know, doing it with you, and you're creating something together. It's such a magical feeling.
And was that on your first try?
yeah, well, it was, most, I mean, I want to, yeah, actually all of the songs were all full takes. So we played them live, right? They were all live takes. And then what we did after we laid down, you know, after the drummer, the bass player, the guitar player, myself, after we played and we played through the whole song, we would do it like two or three times. And then we would listen to each one and we take the one that we like. Like, for example, Time of the Season on there. There's, you know, the Zombies Time of the Season. When we played that, we played it. I believe that's the first take of the song. So we played it. It just felt so good, you know. And then what we did was we later, after we recorded the, you know, our parts, right? And we, you know, we did our thing. Then we would listen to the track and we'd think, oh, okay, well, let's bring in some keys or let's bring in this and that. And we started adding, you know, more elements to it, more sonic elements after the fact. So it's still captured the energy of a live performance. It feels like a live, you know, like a live show or something. The energy is there, but you still have the control of being in the studio. You have a great sounding room with amazing, you know, equipment in there, you know, to modify the sounds of the instrument and to warm them up and make them sound more more pleasing to the ear and more musical.
Well, I remember reading about the Beatles' early hits and how they would just go in the studio and first take, and that, you know, it's just amazing.
Those guys were not human, you know, because, I mean, if you think about all the music that they wrote and created, and then also not just the music, but, you know, lyrically, I mean, their lyrics were incredible. Just all of the different innovations that they brought to how we approach modern day recording. You know, they would do things like they would, I think, put microphones in like a barrel and they would spin it around
to
get different kinds of effects, mm-hmm. right? They would do all these kinds of weird things but you know, they were just so far ahead of their time. And
well, I think a lot of people would say you are too.
No way.
Well, can you play something for us?
Sure, you know? I'd love to. Oh, speaking of the Beatles, we did cover a Beatles song on this record. So we covered Eleanor Rigby. And one of my favorite musicians, Jerry Douglas, who's a wonderful dobro player, actually joined us on a couple tracks on this record. So this is one that he also played with us. But here's Eleanor Rigby. Thank you.
was Jake Shimabukuro sharing a tune from his just-released album, The Greatest Day. He kicks off his concert tour in Colorado this month.